Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really big one, a truly important book, Siddhartha Mukherjee's Pulitzer Prize winner, The Emperor of All Maladies, A Biography of Cancer.
It's definitely a major undertaking. And, you know, this deep dive feels different because the subject, cancer, well, it's incredibly personal, isn't it? Scary for so many people.
It really is.
And Mukherjee's approach is key here. He doesn't just give us a medical timeline. He treats cancer itself like a character, an ancient adversary, deeply, deeply tangled up with our own biology.
Exactly. So our mission today is to unpack that huge story, like 4,000 years of humanity grappling with this internal emperor. We'll trace it from near helplessness to today's molecular science.
Yeah, and it's a story full of incredible ambition, but also really crushing setbacks.
Definitely.
Yeah.
High stakes, big political moves, hope.
Mm.
And you realize a lot of the battles we're fighting now echo way back, decades, even centuries.
It's quite the journey.
So let's start with the author himself, Siddhartha Mukherjee. What makes him the right person to tell this massive story? He's not just a writer, right?
Not at all. He's uniquely qualified because he sits right at the center of it all. He's a practicing oncologist, treating patients. He's a top cancer researcher. He's a professor at Columbia.
Okay.
And yeah, the credentials, Stanford, Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar, Harvard Med School, they're impressive, sure. But it's the combination of roles that gives the book its power.
Right. That's the thing I wanted to highlight. The clinician, the scientist, and the writer. As the clinician, he sees the day-to-day reality, the emotional weight, the limits of what we can do right now.
Mm-hmm. And that brings this incredible empathy to the writing. You feel it.
You really do.
But then, as the scientist, he gets the deep, complex biology. You know, the genetics, the cellular stuff that makes cancer tick, why leukemia isn't breast cancer. He can bridge that gap between the lab bench and the bedside.
And then there's the writing itself. He manages to take this sprawling history, this really complex science, and make it a compelling story. Accessible.
Totally. And he weaves in the human story so effectively. Like his patient, Carla, her fight with leukemia runs through the book and it just grounds everything. It keeps it real, personal.
Yeah, you never feel lost in the science. You're just gripped by this unfolding narrative.
And that narrative approach lets him achieve that core idea, presenting cancer's biography. It's this huge chronological sweep, 4,000 years of us trying to figure out this enemy that feels like, well, part of ourselves sometimes.
It's got layers too, doesn't it? It's not just one straight history.
Exactly. Yeah. It works on multiple levels at once. First, you've got this kind of high stakes detective story. We're following clues, right? From ancient Greeks thinking it was like bad black bile causing tumor.
Like the humoral theory.
All the way up to pinpointing specific gene mutations today. It's a hunt for understanding.
And then there's this whole other thread. Almost like a political thriller.
Yeah. You see how passionate individuals, people like Mary Lasker, this, you know, socialite activist, how she basically forced cancer out of the shadows, made it a public health crusade.
Which led directly to Nixon's war on cancer in 71, right?
Right, absolutely. A huge political moment. And then woven through all the science and politics is the constant human drama.
The patients.
The patients. Their suffering, their resilience. That keeps the whole thing grounded, reminds you what's really at stake.
The sheer scope is amazing. From, like you said, ancient Egypt, then William Halstead and radical surgery, then Sidney Farber and the first chemos, right up to targeted therapies like Gleevec. It covers so much ground.
It really does. Let's maybe walk through some of those big shifts, starting way back.
Okay, where do we begin? Ancient Egypt.
Yeah, the Imhotep papyrus. Around 2500 BCE, it describes a breast tumor. And the conclusion is just stark. There is no treatment.
Chilling. For thousands of years, that was basically it.
Pretty much. Doctors could observe, describe, but not really intervene effectively. Then, fast forward quite a bit to the 19th century, we get the first real paradigm shift with surgery led by William Halstead.
The radical mastectomy man.
That's him. His view, based on the pathology he could see, was that cancer spread outwards from the tumor, like a stain soaking into fabric, centrifugally.
So his logic was cut out a huge margin.
Exactly. Maximal intervention. Remove the breast, sure, but also the chest muscles underneath, the lymph nodes in the armpit, a really disfiguring, aggressive operation.
Wow.
But it became the standard. For decades, it was brutal, based on, you know, an incomplete picture, but it showed the thinking. If you can see it, cut all of it out. Desperate times.
That dominance of surgery lasted a long time, until the mid-20th century, really, when the focus starts to shift towards chemicals.
Right. Enter Sidney Farber, often called the father of modern chemotherapy. He just refused to accept that childhood leukemia had to be fatal.
And he had an idea about how cancer cells worked, didn't he? Something about growth.
Yeah, his experiments in the 40s were revolutionary. He focused on how cancer cells multiply like crazy. They need building blocks, specifically folic acid, to replicate their DNA.
Okay, so he thought, what if we block that?
Precisely. He used chemicals called antifolates, like aminopterin, essentially, to jam up the cell's machinery for using folic acid, stop the duplication.
Chemical roadblock.
And it worked. Temporarily, yes, but he got the first remissions in kids with leukemia. It proved you could fight a systemic disease, one in the blood, with chemicals, not just surgery.
A massive conceptual leap.
Huge. And then this scientific progress collided with political force. Mary Lasker.
The activist you mentioned.
Yeah. She was this incredibly driven, well-connected person who understood that science needed money and political muscle behind it. She lobbied relentlessly.
And that led to the war on cancer.
It was a major driving force behind Nixon declaring the war on cancer in 1971. Her advocacy helped create the infrastructure, like the National Cancer Institute, the NCI, and poured serious federal funding into research.
So we've gone from the knife to the chemical, to, well, a national campaign.
Right. But as the book makes clear, especially in part three, that chemical war came at a heavy cost. The initial excitement. It faded a bit when the reality of chemotherapy toxicity set in.
You mean the side effects?
Intense side effects. Combination chemo regimens, like one called VAME, were incredibly harsh. Doctors learned they had to push patients almost to death's door to kill the cancer.
Maximum intervention, but chemically this time. Brutal.
Extremely brutal. Incremental gains, but at a huge human price. And while all this internal warfare was happening, Mukherjee shows another front opening up. Prevention.
Stopping it before it even starts.
Exactly. While doctors battled inside the body, epidemiologists started showing we could stop it outside.
This is where smoking comes in.
This is the landmark work of Richard Dahl and Austin Bradford Hill in the 1950s. They delivered the undeniable proof linking cigarette smoking to lung cancer. Changed everything.
A public health bombshell.
Absolutely. It showed lifestyle, environment. These weren't vague risks. They were direct causes. That, plus things like the pap smear for early detection, it proved prevention was maybe our most powerful weapon, and certainly the least costly.
Okay, so surgery, chemo, prevention. What was the next big turning point? The science seems to get deeper.
It does. We arrive at the scientific climax, really, understanding the genetic truth of cancer. After centuries of, well, guesswork and decades of poisoning cells, researchers finally started to decode the cancer cell's actual identity.
Moving beyond just killing it indiscriminately.
Right. This was the huge shift that came with discovering oncogenes. Work by Bishop and Varmus was key here.
And what they found was kind of shocking, wasn't it?
It was profound. And terrifying. They realized cancer-causing genes weren't, like, foreign invaders. They were our own normal genes, just broken, malfunctioning, corrupted. They called the normal versions proto-oncogenes.
So cancer is us. Twisted.
That's exactly how Mukherjee puts it. A distorted version of our normal selves. That's why it's so damn hard to kill without harming the patient. Its basic operating system is our operating system, just running wild.
Like a car's accelerator pedal stuck to the floor.
Perfect analogy. The proto-oncogene is the normal accelerator. The oncogene is that pedal jammed down screaming, grow, grow, grow. You can't just rip out the pedal. You need a way to, like, unjam it specifically.
Which leads us to targeted therapy.
Precisely. That genetic insight paved the way for the modern era. Part six of the book. If a specific faulty gene or protein is driving the cancer, why not design a drug that hits only that target?
Like a smart bomb instead of a carpet bomb.
Exactly. And the poster child for this is Gleevec, or imatinib.
Right, for CML, that leukemia.
Chronic myelogenous leukemia, yeah. It often has a specific genetic glitch, the Philadelphia chromosome, which creates a faulty protein BCR-ABL that's basically stuck in the on position for cell growth.
And Gleevec.
Gleevec is like the perfect key designed for that specific faulty BCR-ABL lock. It slots in, shuts down the growth signal, boom. And crucially, it leaves healthy cells mostly alone.
The molecular scalpel replacing the sledgehammer?
Beautifully put, it turned a deadly cancer into something people could live with, a chronic condition. That's the power of precision.
Amazing progress.
Which is why Mukherjee ends not with, you know, mission accomplished, but with this feeling of sober and determined optimism. We know much more. We have better tools, but the fight isn't over.
That whole arc is just incredible. If we step back from the timeline, what are the really big themes someone should take away from this biography?
I think the absolute core idea is seeing cancer as an evolutionary force. It's like Darwinian selection happening inside us.
Mm-hmm.
The tumor cells mutate, adapt, resist treatment. That's why it's so resilient.
It learns.
In a terrifying way, yes, it evolves, which explains why we often need combination therapies to counter that adaptation.
And then there's that recurring pattern. We get really ambitious. Then reality hits.
Right, the cycle of hubris and humility, see it again and again. Halsted thinking he could cure it all with surgery. The huge pronouncements around the war on cancer in 71. Then setbacks, complexity.
Yeah.
But each failure forces deeper learning. It's a humbling process.
Humbling but persistent. We keep going.
We have to. And another key theme, the sheer power of activism and political will. Progress wasn't just inevitable science.
No, it needed that push.
It needed people like Mary Lasker demanding attention, demanding funding, creating the political environment, the institutions like the NCI that allowed the science to flourish on such a large scale.
Science doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Not at all. And finally, maybe most importantly, Mukherjee never lets us forget the centrality of the patient experience. Carla and all the others, through all the science, all the history, the real measure of success or failure is in their lives. Their struggles ground the whole epic story. The science has to serve the person.
It really does. The book is also packed with lines that just stick with you.
Oh, definitely. So many powerful phrases.
One that really hits home is that idea we touched on. Cancer being stitched into our genome.
Yeah.
A distorted version of our normal selves.
Yeah. It reframes it entirely. Not an alien, but an inherent risk of being complex, living things, a vulnerability within.
Which maybe explains why the history is one of soaring confidence and crushing failure. It's a warning, right? Don't expect easy wins.
Exactly. It cautions against hype. Real progress is hard won.
And the way cancer fights back, describing cancer cells as a terrifyingly perfect product of selection within us, that captures the challenge of resistance, doesn't it?
Perfectly. They are masters of adaptation. They find ways around our treatments. It's evolution in real time, inside the body.
And then, looking outwards, the point that to truly prevent cancer, we must be willing to rethink the society that we live in.
That's crucial. It's not just about individual choices, like eating broccoli. It's about policies, regulations, tackling environmental factors, social determinants, big picture stuff.
So bringing all this history and science home, how does understanding this help you, the listener, practically?
Well, first off, knowledge reduces fear, I think. If you or someone you know is facing cancer, understanding the why behind treatments, the history, it can make it less intimidating.
You can talk to your doctor more effectively.
Yeah, have a more informed conversation. Understand why they might suggest targeted therapy instead of, say, aggressive chemo. Navigate the system with a bit more confidence.
Makes sense. And for everyone else.
The lesson from smoking is stark. Prevention matters. Take screening seriously. Pap smears, mammograms, colonoscopies. Early detection saves lives. Lifestyle choices add up. It reinforces that message powerfully.
And maybe be a bit skeptical of miracle cures in the headlines.
Oh, absolutely. The book is a masterclass in the history of hype. It teaches you healthy skepticism. Real breakthroughs are usually slow, built on years, decades of work. Not sudden miracles announced overnight. Be critical of those headlines.
That's really valuable advice. Looking back on the book, what was the most surprising or compelling thing for you?
For me, it's that journey from near total mystery, thinking about things like black bile, to the incredible precision we have now, being able to name the exact faulty protein a drug is targeting. The speed of that leap in knowledge, even with all the bumps, is just astounding. Human ingenuity, really.
Yeah, that contrast is stark.
What about you?
I think for me, it's the shift in the whole philosophy of the fight, moving from, you know, just trying to destroy everything, like with Halsted or early chemo, to this idea of intelligent, targeted intervention.
Scalpel versus the sledgehammer.
Exactly. It feels like we're finally learning to speak cancer's language, even if we can't always silence it completely. It shows this incredible human resilience, demanding this constant mix of prevention, detection, smarter therapies. It's not a war you simply win. It's something you have to continually outsmart.
A constant dialogue, adapting our approach. Well put.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.